Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just?
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I'll be your host for today. We would like to acknowledge that CKUT is located on unceded Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabeg, Abenaki, and Mohawk territories. The Ganyang and Haga Nation is recognized as the custodians of the land and waters on which we gather today. Jajake, Montreal, is historically known as a gathering place for many First Nations. Today, it is home to a diverse population of Indigenous and other peoples. We respect the continued connections with the past, present, and future in our ongoing relationships with Indigenous and other peoples within the Montreal community. Today, we'll be featuring the first part of a two-part interview with the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. The second part will air on our next show on Thursday, December 10th at 5 p.m. But first up, we have some announcements. So on November 25th, the Hamilton Council met, and there's calls to contact the mayor's office and demand an immediate end to the criminalization of encampments and a transfer of 50% of the Hamilton police budget to free housing in Hamilton. You can contact at Fred Eisenberger, mayor@hamilton.ca, and give him a call at 905-546-4200. Hamilton spends $171 million on policing and has a $500,000 surplus and are asking for $4 million and a $4 million increase. And enough is enough. Hamiltonians want a hashtag defund HPS. And the CUPE Local 5167 membership passed a motion at November's GMM. This is a quote. With 2020 coming to an end, it has been reported that the Hamilton Police Services has a surplus budget of over $500,000. The CUPE Local 5167 is requesting that this surplus be given back to the city of Hamilton and that the city invest these monies into public services, social housing, and mental health services. We are also asking that the city of Hamilton make the HPS budget public in keeping with its practices and transparency around all other budgets. Another event that we'd like to share with you today is called By Any Other Name and hashtag Spotlight on Solitary. So there's been a 15-day Spotlight on Solitary confinement. It started on November 16th and it continues until November 30th. There are two more events that you could watch live. There's one on Sunday, November 29th, and the last one on Monday, November 30th. There's info on Facebook and Eventbrite. If you just search Spotlight on Solitary, both pages should come up. And another piece of news that you can find on Tracking the Politics of Criminalization and Punishment in Canada, so that's tpcp-canada.blogspot.com. This was published yesterday, Thursday, November 26th, and it's entitled The Top 10 Reasons Why We Stand in Solidarity with Local Residents Fighting to Stop the Construction of a New Provincial Prison in Kemptville. It talks about what CPEP is. So the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project is a group comprised of professors and students from Carleton University and the University of Ottawa, current and former prisoners, their loved ones, and other people dedicated to building safer communities for all. Since the group's founding in 2012, members have sought to reduce the use and harms of imprisonment in the short term through initiatives like the Jail Accountability and Info Hotline. CPEP has also pursued more ambitious long-term objectives through initiatives like hashtag Nope, No on Prison Expansion, a campaign that promotes government divestment from the punitive injustice system so that greater investments can be made in affordable and supportive housing, education, income supports, peer support workers, mental health care, harm reduction and drug treatment, and other community-based services that actually prevent rather than react to and spur additional social harm and violence. And they also promote transformative justice as a less costly, more effective, and just means of meeting the needs of victims, promoting accountability, and fostering structural changes in affected communities to address the underlying causes of wrongdoing. CPEP opposes any and all efforts to increase state capacity to criminalize and cage human beings, including Premier Doug Ford and company's plan to improve, this is in quotations, improve public safety, modernize facilities, and support economic recovery through the construction of a new prison in Kemptville, replacing the Brockville Jail with a new and larger correctional complex that will house and expanded the St. Lawrence Treatment and Correctional Center, expanding the Kinty Detention Center in Napanee, and renovating the Ottawa Carleton Detention Center. So they outlined 10 reasons why they support the efforts of North Grenville residents who oppose the Ontario Ministry of the Solicitor General's so-called Eastern Region Strategy, including the planned Greater Ottawa Correctional Complex in Kemptville. So Nope is about building communities and not more prisons. So I'll just read quickly the 10 demands. I won't read all the details, but the first one is disrespectful and undemocratic. This talks about the announcement by Doug Ford and Solicitor General Sylvia Jones that aims to expand the correctional complexes. Number two, it destroys agricultural land in the midst of a global environmental and food insecurity crisis. Number three, it's unnecessary and wasteful. It says in February 2020, there was an average of 8,269 people held in Ontario's provincial prisons. By April 2020, the province's prison population declined by 29% to an average of 5,889 prisoners through a series of diversion measures like bail and decarceration measures, like temporary absences to reduce the risk of COVID-19 transmission behind bars and communities where facilities are located. So it makes no sense to expand Ontario's capacity. Number four, an investment that compounds rather than addresses the bail crisis. On any given day, roughly two-thirds of provincial prisoners in Ontario are in pretrial detention and awaiting court dates, sometimes for months and even years. This remand population has grown massively over the past three decades due to clogged courts and problems with the bail system. So instead of spending hundreds of millions on building more prison spaces, including Kemptville, the government should be investing significantly more in bail reform and other measures to reduce prison numbers now. Number 5, more cages and prison jobs aren't good for people. Number 6, imprisonment deepens inequality in an area of reconciliation with indigenous peoples and amidst struggles to end anti-black racism across the world. Number 7, we will continue to needlessly jail those living with mental health issues and drug users. Number 8, massively expensive. So according to Infrastructure Ontario, it'll cost between $200 million to $499 million just to design, build, and finance and maintain the new Greater Ottawa Correctional Complex through a 30-year public-private partnership that will principally line the pockets of large construction firms and big banks. Number 9, do something with the money to help now. So the provincial government plans to start construction of the new Kempville prison in 2024 and open it in 2025, while large gaps in community care and services exist in Eastern Ontario that need to be filled today. And number 10, imprisonment doesn't work. Historically, prisons have proven both very costly and to fail at meeting their stated objectives. Criminological research shows that incarceration is the least effective way to enhance safety or deter law breaking. Imprisonment damages prisoners along with their loved ones and communities. So according to this same website, the TPCP and the anti-carceral group, as of Friday, November 6th, the confirmed cases of COVID-19 linked to Canadian carceral institutions for the month of October was 373 reported COVID-19 cases. And so that was, 237 provincial, so territorial prisoners. And then there was 100, so out of the provincial territorial prison staff, there was 90, and there were 10 federal prison staff. So that makes it 100. And that's how you get the number 337. There are specific numbers for the prisons in Quebec, which I will read out. So the Établissement Détention de Hull, there's 6 prisoners there. And 9 staff. So that's a total of 15 folks who are currently positive with COVID-19. The Établissement de Détention de Montréal in Bordeaux, there's 1 staff there. So that's just 1. There's no prisoners. This was as of November 6th, the data that they had for October. Établissement de Détention New Carlisle, so there's 1 prisoner there that's infected with COVID-19. And then in Rimouski, there's 2 staff, no prisoners that have COVID-19. And in Trois-Rivières, there's 18 prisoners and 15 staff. So that's quite a high number, bringing that total there to 33. And lastly, in Sorel Tracy, there's 1 staff. That's the breakdown in terms of Quebec prisons. And if you go on the website, you can find the breakdown for every province. On the cp-ep.org website, there's information and links to pictures and video of the vigil for Anthony Oust, who unfortunately fell to his death when police rammed into his apartment in Ottawa. And this vigil was held on Sunday, November 8th. And it was a month after the tragic and preventable death of Anthony Oust. And it says that it was mourning community members who gathered at Jasmine Park to hold the vigil and commemorate the life of Anthony, another young black man who was taken away too soon from his family and his loved ones and the community. So please check out the website, and you can check out the photos and video from the event. It's very, very sad circumstances and unacceptable. And the other piece of news that's really important on the cp-ep.org website that's brand new from yesterday, or 2 days ago rather, is an article written by Lydia Dobson. So I encourage folks to check that out. Again, that's cp-ep.org, and it's about the Ottawa police increasing their budget after a violent crackdown. So her article summarizes the events of over 5 days of anti-police protesting, occupations of stolen land, and like disgusting police management at the and abuse of the municipal level in so-called Ottawa. So CPEP had been raising awareness about the dangers of the carceral state for over 7 years, and since June of 2020 have joined in the fight with multiple groups and coalitions to defund the police where we live and support those in other places. We must make our community safe from the police and redistribute police money back into the community so that it can support itself. So I encourage folks to check that article out. And we are going to take a musical break, and we'll be back with the interview with Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. But now for our musical break, we go to Janelle Monae with Turntables.
The table about to turn. The table about to turn. The table about to turn. Yeah. I've been flipping through my timeline. Trying to get my mind right. My city cried out. I got to cool down, but I'm under pressure. Looking with my Crisco. Look at what my fist go. A renegade when I'm in a rage. I got to cool down, but I'm under pressure. I keep my hands dirty, my mind clean. Got a new agenda with a new dream. I'm kicking out the old regime. Liberation, elevation, education. America, you a lie. But the whole world about to testify. I said the whole world about to testify. And the table's about to, the table's about to turn. Kitchen, then you should do the dishes. Burning down plantations. Ain't no parking, I don't need no validation. I light sage when I'm in a rage. I don't need permission, I got my intuition. Hands dirty, mind clean. A different vision with a new dream. We kicking out the old regime. Liberation, elevation, education. I said America, use a lie. But the whole world about to testify. I said the whole world.
Back. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. That was Janelle Monae with Turntable. Now we're going to feature the first part of a two-part interview with Toronto Prisoner Rights Project member Rajan and member Rosa to discuss the critical work that they do to support those on the inside in various ways, from hotlines for prisoners to support funds and to imagining abolition in real and practical ways, and to fight against the prison industrial complex and police by creating networks of self-care and community care made up of therapists, traditional indigenous ways of healing, and sharing skills with folks to do self-care based on behavior dialectical therapy, as well as uncovering and exploring, taking deep dives into the connections between Black liberation and abolition, and many, many more topics. So I first just wanted to thank you for making time for Prison Radio Show to do this interview today.
And I wanted to thank you both for all of the work that you're doing. So before we get going on questions, I just wanted for each of you to quickly introduce yourself so our listeners know who we're talking to. Today we have on the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project with Rajan and Rosa. So they're just going to do a really quick intro, and then we're going to get down to some questions.
My name is Rajan. I'm an organizer with the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project, or a member of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. Pretty much that.
And I'm Rosa, and I'm a part of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project as well.
So the first question I have is just about the history of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. How did it form? And then how did each of you get involved?
I can talk a little bit about that. So I think it formed late last year with organizers that were looking to create a space that bridged abolition work with prisoner advocacy, because sometimes that part is seemingly left out of a lot of abolition work. And also specifically in the Toronto area, where there was a hole where that kind of work could fill. So it's a community and grassroots organization working towards a world without prisons. And I got involved earlier this year, there was a webinar series that the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project hosted. And so there was one moderated by Cyrus Marcus Ware, who's an artist, an activist. And yeah, it was just a really cool space that felt important to be a part of. I don't know if Rajan, do you wanna?
Yeah, a lot of us that were sort of a part of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project in the inception, have loved ones inside, are former prisoners or academics or researchers, frontline workers. We really couldn't find, Rosa said, another space that existed like this that was in Toronto that was doing prisoner justice work and abolition work from that lens. A lot of the organizations that are serving prisoners have sort of deep relationships with the ministry to be able to have access to do in-reach work inside prisons. And it means that a lot of folks have sort of shied away from talking about prison abolition in a bold and uncompromising way. And we're inspired by movements that we've seen come before us, movements that are prominent right now that are pretty much led by Black and Indigenous people that use direct action to assert our rights to demand change, to demand justice. And so we began actually working pretty closely with groups like the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project, which is located in Ottawa, the East Coast Prison Justice Group, which is located in Halifax, Black Lives Matter Toronto, different groups like this that have been using sort of grassroots tactics to be able to talk about white supremacy, to talk about colonialism, to talk about racial violence, and then also specifically talking about prisoners. And so we wanted to be able to have a space and a community to be able to do this work. It started off with a few of us, and the pandemic has sort of exploded and brought so much more attention to the harms inside prisons and jails, in the same way that it's done sort of with everything across all of the sort of different institutions supported by the state. Just sort of with this new support for our work, it's become less a group of five or six of us looking for a home and a real community of a lot of people who are coming together, talking about these issues and taking on different projects.
That's great. So did the organization start during, no, it started before the pandemic, but sort of took off during the pandemic? Is that?
Yeah. Two folks, Jessica Evans and Lydia Dobson, I think we're responsible for the sort of initial inception or conception of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project, and that, I believe, started like early in 2019. And so the sort of first work that was happening was actually around the prison phone system. As folks may or may not know, here in Ontario and in federal prisons across the country, Bell Canada for a long time has been gouging people, prisoners, their loved ones, their families, people that work with prisoners. And so that was one of the first issues that we had taken on as the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project, working closely with CPEP, or the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project in Ottawa.
And I think that's the Bell Let's Talk. Is that?
Yeah, Bell Let Us Talk became our campaign, sort of closely mirroring the Bell Let's Talk mental health campaign that Bell pretends to care about mental health.
right. And no, that was a really important. That was a really important campaign, I remember. And we had on a lawyer named Karima Saad on an earlier show. She was also talking about her involvement in that campaign. And so I just wanted to give our listeners a little bit of an idea of, like, what is the scope of what the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project does, and sort of what are the main goals? I know, Rosa, you articulated that a little bit by saying, I think part of it was like a world without prisons, but I was just wondering if you could sort of, what are the sorts of things that you do?
I mean, I think we really emphasize, like, you know, direct action in terms of organizing. So, like, you know, some of that has been, there's been hunger strikes and labor strikes in prisons across Ontario in the past few months. So we've been working to support their work outside of the prisons, which, yeah, I think that's kind of an example of some of the work that we do. And also an emphasis on mutual aid. So we have the Prisoner Emergency Support Fund, which is part, we work with the CPEP, which Rayshawn mentioned, and then public education is an important part. But I think the goal is, like with all of these projects, just represent like the overall goal of supporting prisoners inside. And like I mentioned earlier, like the overall goal of like a world without prisons. So balancing those two parts, I think, is like central to the project.
John, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, no, yeah, like sort of perfectly sums it up. Like our, we're sort of use the famous adage of by any means necessary, whatever it's going to take for us to be able to realize the goals of abolition. I think what's really inspiring about this community and this group of people, at least that I found in coming into this work, is that this is a group of folks who really believe that abolition is possible. And, you know, the events with the calls to action to defund the police following the brutal displays of violence towards Black and Indigenous people, the shortcomings laid bare by the pandemic, have showed us that abolition is possible. You know, we've seen massive decarceration inside institutions as a direct result to activism and a direct result of the pandemic. And yeah, so we're a group of people who really can see a better world. And yeah, direct action, mutual aid, public education are some of the tools that we've been using now to be able to bring us closer to that goal. I think one of the big things that we're also really trying to do is make sure that we are organizing alongside prisoners. And we both have former prisoners within our group, but know that there's a lot of activism. Rosa spoke about the hunger and labor strikes that have been happening. Really the brunt of action and direct action has been taken inside institutions. And so a part of our work is as people who are organizing on the outside to make visible the protests and sacrifices that people are making on the inside. We use things like email zaps and phone zaps to be able to take what we're hearing from prisoners directly inside, and offer that message to people who support and have a conscience on the outside, to use our sort of collective power on the outside to not speak over prisoners, but to amplify their voices in this work.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely announced on our show a few shows ago about the phones app for the Toronto East Detention Center and made some calls myself. And I was just wondering if you could give us an update on that. I know like there was a hunger strike going on for a while, and they were protesting the awful conditions and not being allowed to be outside. They hadn't, I think, been outside for 12 days at that point. I think that was in the summertime, I believe. Or my months are a bit shaky, but I think it was summertime. So can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, I believe at that point that was in October when we had announced that. So just in the autumn, fall, or I'm not really sure when seasons fall. But the strike sort of ended when folks at the jail, the superintendent, agreed to a meeting, and then agreed to meeting some of the demands, things like access to recreation time. Had been a huge issue. The sort of 12 days without being outside was a glaring human rights abuse. In that meeting, they were sort of just offered minor concessions towards their goals, but you know, hunger strikes require a lot of personal sacrifice, and so thinking that, you know, at least some victories were going to come out, the folks there at in the unit on hunger strike at Toronto East Detention Center decided to bring an end to the hunger strike. As we know, though, as we've learned with all of these hunger strikes, superintendents, prison and jail staff do not negotiate in good faith. They are not coming to the table with genuine intentions the way, or with any integrity in the same way that the prisoners that are raising these issues have come forward with. And so just like we've seen in all of the other cases, they sort of backslided on a number of the commitments that they've made, imposed like unrealistic timelines or sort of lengthy timelines that will, you know, just sort of wait out the people that are there. Most of them that are, or all of the folks that are on that unit are on a remand. Most of the people in that institution are on remand. And so, I mean, it was important to see the hunger strike get started. We are still waiting to be able to hear back from some of our comrades that were involved in organizing. We do know that after events like this, it becomes all the more difficult to be able to hear from prisoners that are on the inside. They're either placed on lockdown or moved around, shuffled around, don't really have access to phones. And so we haven't been able to hear back about what kind of specific actions folks might be looking to take or what kind of support they need, but trying to keep those lines of communication open. And we've know that other folks in other institutions and folks at Toronto East Detention Center are still concerned with all of the issues that was raised in that action.
Well, thank you for that update. And actually, you kind of segued into my next question, was just about communication with those inside about issues like this. So I know that it's hard. I know, like in Canada, the prisons, I think, are even more restricted in terms of media and stuff going in than even in the States. And so I was just wondering, how do you navigate that? And are there tips you have for other people, like people listening, for those on the outside who, you know, want to be able to bring more of these issues to light, and they're working in various organizations across the country, could be listening in now. Are there ways that you know that you're able to navigate and be able to have a communication? I know you said that after these events, unfortunately, there's reprisals against them, and then, you know, you're not often able to continue the communications. But and also during COVID, how did that impact it? Sorry, that was a lot of questions at once, but I know during COVID there weren't a lot of in-person visits, so just speak about how first of all, just the draconian system of the prisons and like communicating with those inside. And then on top of it, how did the COVID then sort of complicate that?
Yeah. I think that it's important to note that all of it is strategic, that it's all a part of the process of disappearing prisoners, of making it so that we're not hearing about the consistent and persistent human rights abuses, the sort of not in my backyard kind of mentality that has shipped prisons far enough away from any sort of large communities that can be organizing. One thing that I would say is, like, in there are places like the Jail and Information Accountability Hotline in Ottawa that does a phenomenal job. It's a peer-run hotline, and they take calls from folks at Ottawa Carlton Detention Center. There's been, I believe, 2 strikes at the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center over the last few months, and we've been able to hear exactly what's been happening inside because folks have that relationship with people inside, and they can speak to people across the prison all day, every day. And so we have been thinking about also trying to replicate that model to allow for just, you know, information sharing, to be able to allow us to offer direct support to prisoners inside, and then to have a community that can listen, so that when there are these abuses, that they're not just falling into the void of another human rights complaint that just gets piled up in detailed in a lengthy report of all the things that prisons have done wrong over the past year. And so that's one of the things, like having those kind of hotlines. The Barton Solidarity Project runs a similar hotline in Hamilton. They're just incredibly expensive endeavors because of these sort of draconian price gouging practices that the state maintains. And so we had a couple of fundraising sort of tactics and ideas that we're revisiting right now to figure out how it is we can pull off that work and to be able to sustain and support that work. Right now, actually, for your listeners, there is a fundraiser for the Jail and Information Accountability Hotline in Ottawa. So check out CPEP's website, cp-ep.org, and please support, because that has been an incredible tool for us to build a real rapport with people inside, to organize with folks inside, and to hear the voices directly of folks that are on the inside. Otherwise, we've really relied on having personal relationships and relationships with folks inside, either through lawyers. The strike that happened at Central East, it was a criminal lawyer who represents a lot of folks out there at Central East that initially took their story and fed their demands to the media and helped to connect a lot of different community organizations and people who have ties to Central East to the hunger strike demands there. We will often get calls or emails from people with family members inside who call us about one of the primary things that we've been hearing about is these intense lockdowns that have been happening for long stretches of time that have kept people away from being able to see their families, talk to their loved ones, do anything like that, get outside, enjoy rec time in the name of COVID prevention. I think some of those relationships of how we've sort of circumvented the existing barriers. We have our email, torontoprisonersrights@gmail.com, which a lot of folks have been able to write to. We've now have a PO box. We're taking direct mail from folks, and have seen some personal concerns come through there and try to figure out how we can offer advocacy for folks on the inside. The sort of long-term goal or hope for us is to be able to have a hotline. There's some like obvious barriers to that, though. The ministry maintains a pretty strict list of who is on the approved list of 1-800 numbers that folks can call out. They are already taking issue with our work as an abolitionist organization that doesn't believe that they should exist, and so trying to figure out how to do that is definitely an ongoing inconsistent discussion. But for folks that are looking to do this work, I would say you know, connect to people with loved ones on the inside. That's a huge thing. Reach out to lawyers and let them know that there's a community of people that are listening. And then when the stories do come out, demonstrate to the folks inside that you hear them. In some of the jails, if you protest outside loud enough, they will hear you and be more encouraged to share stories and to take on actions. It's, I think, not a coincidence that there's been a lot of activism around prisoners and prison abolition, and then there's also been an increase sort of effort of activism inside prisons and jails, particularly within provincial institutions that see people in there for 2 years less a day. There's been a number of hunger strikes and labor strikes and just really empowering things, and it's because folks are turning on their TVs and they're seeing people take to the streets proclaiming that Black Lives Matter, the prisoners' lives matter, and that kind of stuff offers some empowerment.
Well, thank you for that. When you say that, you mentioned that some institutions like are sort of, you know, take issue with the fact that you're like that the organization is abolitionist, and that basically, yeah, like challenges their existence. Like, in what ways have they taken issue with the work that the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project does? Not against you? Are they trying to file some kind of legal stuff against you, or like what ways are they showing you, like trying to push back, I guess, against what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, we know that that has definitely happened in the past from the state, and so we're not unprepared for that to happen. One thing that's happened so far that is incredibly frustrating, so we run, as Rosa was talking about, our Prisoner Emergency Support Fund, which seeks to support prisoners, folks that are getting out, folks that are still inside, with a stipend to be able to support them. One of the immediate barriers that got put up was folks denying the stipend from going into prisons and jails, particularly for folks who don't have access to support systems outside. You know, maybe they've become estranged from their family, which is a very common thing. If they don't have somebody to receive the money from them outside, and the jail is denying money coming forward from somebody who's not on their canteen list, it's next to impossible to be able to get the money. And, you know, folks need that money to afford hygiene products in the time of COVID, to be able to, to be able to buy stuff inside. And there's just this sort of unconscionable, with no reasons offered or provided, criminalization of a mutual aid program. Just like with no rhyme or reason. We haven't heard from any prisons or jails a clear explanation as to why they won't let the money inside. That's sort of one issue. We have a lot of folks who do like frontline service work. We have a lot of folks who have loved ones on the inside. And so when it comes to rallying outside the jail, we've had folks try to have their clearance pulled from going inside the jails if they were found participating in one of these actions. Just overreaching on the part of the ministry, the part of prisons and jails.
And have you been able to, like, are there any lawyers that are part of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project that have been able to push back against that? Like, let's say there is, let's take the example that you mentioned about someone who, or one of the many people who are estranged from their family that are unfortunately, like, inside, and now they don't have, like, a family member to sort of receive the money. Would it be possible for, like, you or Rosa or, like, some other individual to get on their canteen list as an individual, or is that also a stumbling block, or is it just like the organization not being able to?
Yeah, it's also a stumbling block. So we've tried that particular thing, and so I mean there's a fair bit of background information, so we've tried to do it both ways. We've had some moderate successes with some institutions to be able to to have supporters or folks play that role. They just make it as difficult as possible. For example, Central East is a pretty good example. Sort of early on in trying to be able to get money into Central East, we noticed this one barrier of not having folks on their canteen list. And so I had a bunch of those folks add me on their canteen list or call list, went to the jail, and they said that for whatever reason, they can only accept one money order from one person at a time, and so per day. So if you had 14 people, you got to make 14 trips to Lindsay, which is, I currently live in Toronto, which is a decent trek from Toronto. There's no rhyme or reason as to why that would be a rule in place. So we just see sort of, for lack of a better term, petty sort of things rolled out to be able to make that more difficult than it needs to be. Rosa?
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think that's like the clearest example of it is that it's just they have the power to make these petty decisions that are small and like they seem like, you know, they have no reason, but they have such a huge impact on people inside. And like that's the cruelty of the system, I think, is how it's like tied up in bureaucracy. So it seems insignificant, but the reality is, yeah.
It's interesting. I wonder, just coming from a legal perspective, as I'm like an up-and-coming lawyer, I wonder if there's a way to put all the cases together and like have a class action against like a few Ontario correctional facilities. It's just, like you said, like they're each little decision, but it's a huge impact overall, and it's a huge impact for each individual person. So thank you for flagging that. That's something that needs to be further looked into as to how we could navigate or transcend that. And so I was going to ask about the Prisoner Support Fund. Thank you for bringing it up already. I was curious how the funds are allocated then if they're sort of being blocked from some inside and there is some success with getting some funds to some inside, which is great. How are the funds like for those coming out? How would someone that was recently coming out from being inside for a while sort of like apply to get the funds? And just, this is also for folks that are listening on the inside, because we do have a listenership of folks that are on the inside, mostly in Quebec. But I was just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. At the moment, we, so the fund is right now serving folks in Ontario. That's sort of loose too, like if you're from Ontario, and you're coming back here and you need support, please apply. We have an application online. So if you go to torontoprisonersrightsproject.org, you'll be able to find a link to the application. If you go to the GoFundMe fundraiser, there's a link to the application there. If you email us either at prisonerfund@gmail.com or torontoprisonersrightsproject@gmail.com or torontoprisonersrights@gmail.com, I apologize. We'll just send you a link to the application. We have some in-reach workers from a number of different prisoner advocacy organizations that know about the fund, that have access to the fund, and help to fill out applications for people that are on the inside. And so as they're getting outside, the easiest way for us to get money to folks is by e-transfer. So we'll e-transfer you money if you can accept that. Send a money order to an address, if you can offer an address. One of our like big priorities is supporting folks that are getting out. We know that folks get out with, like some of the folks that are applying for the fund get out and they don't have shoes, they don't have clothes, they don't have something for groceries, they don't have housing is like the sort of major thing. Are sort of by any means necessary that we can try to get you money. We're gonna try to get you the stipend. We know that it's not gonna solve all the problems, but definitely a show of solidarity.
Yeah, that's so great. That's really good. And I will definitely be putting like links on our Twitter and the press page and information and link to the application for those that are inside or have loved ones inside in Ontario that are gonna be coming out soon. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the latest or a current campaign or any campaign that you want to talk about. I know that there's the hashtag 500 possibilities. There's also like building abolitionist futures. There's also the forum, I think, like we keep each other safe. We could also talk about that one later if we focus more on abolition in a later question. But yes, any campaigns that are going on now that you want to tell our listeners about or that you're proud of that you just want to talk about?
I can talk a little bit about the 500 Possibilities Project. So that kind of came about, you know, it's centered around the investment or the proposed investment of $500 million into expanding prisons in Ontario. And so, you know, the project is kind of asking people to look at what else that money could go into that would create a better or safer future than prisons currently do. So there are 500 possibilities that the community submitted. And it's a really cool list to go through just if you ever have a chance, because it's very like uplifting to see what people can imagine for a better world. I feel like that's really grounding for me to look through. And then right now we're working on creating a report to sort of combine all the things that people came up with and also look at how the money is currently being invested. And that's time, we're trying to time it so that it comes out around the budget for 2021. So it'll hopefully be by the end of this year or early next year that report comes out. But yeah, I think that's kind of a lot of the work that we do is about, I guess, I mean, I think a lot of the recommendations were, you know, not necessarily directly related to supporting people inside. But I think that it's pretty easy or clear to make that bridge for people. I think that's some of the work that we're doing in the report, is just trying to like connect everything that the community suggested back to like the fundamental mission of advocacy and support for prisoners, I think. Yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about We Keep Each Other Safe a little bit, Rajan.
Yeah, for sure. I think one thing, though, on that point, too, like some of the things that people have talked about are like food security programs and housing for all and thinking about a just recovery to COVID, helping to create employment opportunities for folks. And these are needs that we're hearing from prisoners are like emergent needs. Some of the reasons why folks are sent back to jail is linked to not having housing or not having income opportunities. And so, you know, while we're making these investments, I mean, $500 million is just scratching the surface, because then they've also earmarked a lot of other infrastructure fundings to expand existing prisons across Ontario that is not included in that $500 million. And so at a time when everyone's calling for us to defund the police, and taking issue with the same sort of carceral punishment that we're seeing with the state, it is, I think, like a blatant disregard for the public to then invest millions of dollars into building up more prisons and increasing those spaces.
I think something like what we talk a lot about at the 500 Possibilities meetings is like, it's not about the $500 million number, like that it could be any amount of money, and it is any amount of money. Like they're not tied down by any restrictions. They're choosing not to invest that money in the things that would like actually contribute to what people need right now. So yeah, the money, like the figure number is irrelevant. It's about like what it represents about how we spend money or what the government prioritizes right now. So yeah, I think that's a good point too.
And where can people find the list? Is it on the website?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, it's just under 500 Possibilities on the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project website, and then the report will also be there.
Great. And are those conversations ongoing, or did they happen and are they sort of concluded, or is this like an ongoing thing?
It is an ongoing thing, just as we try to work through the report, and it's like a very collaborative process right now. So yeah, we meet pretty consistently to talk through what the report's going to look like. So yeah, it's very ongoing.
Cool. cool. It sounds amazing.
That was the first part of a two-part interview with Rejan and Rosa of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project. The Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project is a coalition of researchers, law students, frontline workers, and people with lived experience. They engage in public education and mutual aid work to shed light on the harms caused by incarceration and connect incarcerated and recently released populations with legal, community, financial, and health supports. The second part of this inspiring interview, highlighting the important work that Rejan and Rosa and the rest of the collective members of the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project do, will air on our next show, which is on Thursday, December 10th at 5 p.m. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I've been your host. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. As I said, the next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, December 10th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our new listener comment line at 438-337-8423. Again, that's 438-337-8423. 8423. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write to us at the Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, and that's 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. But it's best to send us email or talk to us on our listener comment line, as the station is closed and we're not there frequently to pick up mail, although we do go from time to time. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Yasmin, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned.
Fight against COVID-19. We must all continue to respect public health guidelines and follow self-isolation instructions. Self-isolate if you have symptoms. Self-isolate after testing. Self-isolate if the test is positive. Self-isolate when you return from a trip. And self-isolate when you've been in contact with someone who's tested positive. Self-isolation is important. Please, take it seriously. Learn more at quebec.ca/self-isolating. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing your wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked to CKT 90.3 FM.